Richmond Radio Works presents Roughing It, based on the book by Mark Twain. The year is 1861, and a young Sam Clemens arrives at the collection of buildings called Carson City, Nevada.
Ante up, gentlemen. Deuce is wild.
I'm in for two.
Chester, not so loud. She'll hear you. I'll see your two and raise you one.
Three, huh? I'm in. Sounds like another storm's a-brewing. I'll tell you what, them Nevada winds, they ain't nothing to mess with.
Feels like one of them storms could blow us all the way to California.
If we was in California, we wouldn't have to spend all day in the desert surveying for the governor. I'll raise.
I'm in.
You think they'll ever really build train tracks all the way out here to Nevada territory?
They will, if they keep finding silver at that Comstock mine.
I'm in. Folks keep coming in to hunt for it. I'll tell you what, think they're going to get rich on silver like all them folks that found gold in California? Most of them never found nothing. They keep looking, though. I fold.
Bring your things right in here, Mr. Clemens. There's an empty bed to the back over there.
Thank you, Mrs. Flanagan.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. I told you boys there'll be no poker playing in here. I run a respectable boarding house. Give me those cards.
See? What did I tell you?
Mrs. Flanagan, that's our last deck.
You'll find another. You always do.
Damn. Oh, pardon me, Mrs. Flanagan, but I finally got a good
Look
hand.
At this. I got two pair.
Hey, where'd that extra ace of hearts come from? Are you cheating
There's
again?
There's no cheating and no gambling here. Hand those cards over. Give them to me.
Excuse me, Mrs. Flanagan, but they're not playing poker.
Not playing poker? Mm-hmm. What is she talking about?
What do you mean, not poker?
No, that's not poker at all. I've watched many a poker game from the decks of the Mississippi River boats I used to pilot. I don't play myself, of course, but I've seen the game played, and that's not poker.
Stranger, I don't know where you're from, but it sure as hell...
Reuben, you fool! Shut up. He's helping us out.
Why, I've seen this game played in some of the finest homes in New York. You've heard of the Rockefellers.
Yes, of course.
Mr. J.P. Morgan? Mr. William Randolph Hearst?
Yes.
Mrs. Flanagan, they play this game. It's called cribbage.
Sure, and it looks like poker to me.
Oh, no, Mrs. Flanagan. That's what it is. It's flibbage.
Cribbage.
Cribbage.
Really, Mrs. Flanagan? This game originates in the palaces of Europe and has only recently found its way here to the Nevada Territory.
The palaces of Europe, you say?
Why, yes. Kings and queens have played this game. There's a famous painting in the London Museum showing King Henry VIII playing cribbage with all of his wives.
Well, it looks like poker. I'll not have gambling in this boarding house.
The fine ladies of the courts of Europe would never gamble.
Well, saints preserve us. Keep the noise down, boys, and don't stay up too late. You're costing me a fortune in lamp oil and candles. And somebody lock the shutters tonight. There's a storm rolling in.
Stranger, I don't know who you are, but I want to shake your hand. Welcome to Carson City, Nevada.
Name Sam Clemens.
Silas Doyle.
Amos Murphy.
Chester Kelly.
Reuben O'Donovan. They call us the Irish Brigade.
The Irish Brigade?
We come out here with a wagon train thinking we could work on the railroad.
Yeah, but there ain't no railroad.
So the governor put us all to work surveying the land. Keeps telling us they're going to build one.
So, we spend all day out yonder in the sun, lugging change through the sand.
It's pretty dry work, but now and then we'll see a bobcat or some critter. And Reuben here, he likes to watch for them big spiders, tarantulas.
Tarantulas? I have heard of them. Never saw one, though.
Well, looky here. I keep them in a jar. Here's a tarantula.
Is that one spider? That looks big enough to be three or four put together.
Nah, it's just one. I call this one Huckleberry. That other one over there is Sawyer.
Huckleberry? Sawyer?
I like to give them names.
Well, I reckon so.
They don't like it too much if you tap on the side of the jar. See?
Whoa, spoiling for a fight.
Now, Reuben, you got a lid on those jars? Nobody wants to get bit by one of those dang critters. They can make you plenty sick.
They're covered. Don't worry none. Well, what brings you to these parts, Sam? You ain't a silver miner, are you? You look like you come in on the stagecoach.
Amos, you old coyote. Stagecoach ain't got room for pickaxes and such. Miners are coming in by wagon train. Stagecoach only brings in preachers and politicians.
Well, rest assured, gentlemen, I'm no preacher. You know that President Lincoln appointed a governor for the Nevada Territory.
Well, you ain't no governor. He's got his own house.
No, but the governor needed a secretary.
You the governor's secretary?
No, that's my brother. He got his own private room downstairs in this fine establishment.
So, who are you?
I'm helping him out. I'm the secretary to the secretary to the governor of the Nevada Territory.
Like I said, preachers and politicians.
Well, Sam, you're welcome here. Pull up a chair and we'll deal you in. Riding in that stagecoach, you probably ain't had a chance to play much, what'd you call it? Crummage?
Cribbage.
Yeah, probably not a lot of time for that. Amos, deal a new hand.
I tell ya, took us 3 weeks to get here from St. Joe, Missouri. East of the mountains, nothing but tall grass and buffalo as far as the eye can see. West of the mountains, sagebrush and jackrabbits. And they'd stop every few miles to swap out the horses. Sometimes we dropped off the mail. Once or twice we picked up some passengers. Now just outside of St. Joe, we picked up this one woman, told the driver she was only going a little ways. She sat down, never said a word. It was getting on towards evening, and the mosquitoes were thick. She'd smack one, and then another, and then another. She must have killed 30 or 40, but never said a word. Never started conversation. So I summoned up my courage. The mosquitoes are pretty bad here, ma'am.
You bet.
Excuse me? What did you say?
You bet they're thick. Danged if I didn't begin to think you fellers was deaf and dumb. I did, by gosh. Here I've sat, a-bustin' skeeters and wondering what was ailing you. First I thought you was deaf and dumb. Then I thought you was sick or crazy or something. And then by and by, I begin to reckon you was a passel of sickly fools that couldn't think of nothing to say. Name's Margaret Whitcomb. Friends call me Maggie. Where do you come from?
I'm Sam Clements. This is my brother, Orion. We left St. Joseph, Missouri
well, by... Well, I'm only going about 50 miles down the track. Going to visit my sister, Becky. I ain't seen her since this time last year. She married a Thatcher, one of the Thatchers from Lincoln, Nebraska. Now, what do you say to that? She did all right by herself, I say.
From Lincoln, Nebraska?
They're homesteading. Got 160 acres, working on getting more. Some of the best seed corn in Lancaster County. She's got 3 kids, 2 boys and a girl. The girl's as cute as can be and sharp as a nail. Gonna break some hearts, that one. The boys work with their father on the farm, of course.
Oh, of course. Now what
now,
is your sister...
Now, they almost didn't get that farm. I come along for a visit a few years back. Jim, I said, that land's free land. You should get yourself some.
And so it went all through the night until we stopped a little before daybreak. Now and then she'd pause, but only long enough to catch a breath. And even as she was leaving the coach, it was...
Now you get out of Cottonwood, you fellers, and lay over a couple of days, and I'll be along sometime tonight. And if I can do you any good by edging in a word now and then, I'm right there. Folks will tell you, I've always been kind of offish and particular for a gal that's raised in the woods. And I am, with the ragtag and bobtail as a gal has to be. If she wants to be anything, but when people comes along, which is my equals, I reckon I'm a pretty sociable heifer after all.
Thank you, Mrs. Whitcomb.
So, did you stop at Cottonwood?
We reckoned that pleasure was more than our ears could handle. We headed on west.
Probably for the best.
Another spot, our coach broke down. The repairs were going to take most of the day, so we were invited to join a buffalo hunt. By this time, we'd picked up another passenger. Name O'Bemus. We all enjoyed riding across the prairie after the buffalo, but you know, they can be fierce. A wounded buffalo bull chased Bemus nearly 2 miles. He spied a tree, the only tree around for a good space, and he rode over there, climbed up, and took refuge.
Ah!
Once they got done laughing, someone finally came over and shot the buffalo. Bemus didn't want to talk about it for some 24 hours, but at last he began to soften little by little.
Well, it was not funny. There was no sense in those gawks laughing it up like that. I'd have shot that one they call Hank if I could have done it without crippling 6 or 7 other people. But I couldn't. My shotgun's so confounded comprehensive. I wish those loafers had been up in the tree. They wouldn't have wanted to laugh so.
Recognizing that he had an audience, Bemus decided to take advantage.
Well now, if I'd have had a horse worth a cent, but no. The minute he saw that buffalo bull wheel on him and give a bellow, that horse raised straight up in the air and stood on his heels. The saddle begun to slip, and I took him around the neck and laid close to him, and I began to pray. Then he come down and stood up on the other end a while, and I declare the bull actually stopped to watch.
That would have been something to see.
Then the bull made a pass at him and uttered a bellow that sounded perfectly frightful. It was so close to me. And that made a raven distracted maniac of the horse, and I wish I may die if he didn't stand on his head for a quarter of a minute and shed tears.
Humph! Never seen a horse shed tears before.
He was absolutely out of his mind, he was, as sure as truth itself, and he really didn't know what he was doing. Then the bull come charging at us, and my horse dropped down on all fours and took a fresh start. And then for the next 10 minutes, he would actually throw one handspring after another so fast that the bull begun to get unsettled too, and it didn't know where to start in. And so he stood there sneezing and shoveling dust over his back and bellowing every now and then, and thinking he'd got a $1,500 circus horse for breakfast, certain.
Boy. Yeah, I'd paid money to see that, I would.
Well, I was first out on his neck, the horses, not the bulls, and then underneath, and next onto his rump, and sometimes head up, and sometimes heels. But I tell you, it seemed solemn and awful to be ripping and tearing and carrying on so much in the presence of death, as you might say. Pretty soon the bull made a snatch for us and brought away some of my horse's tail.
His tail? Wait a minute.
And then you ought to seen that spider-legged old skeleton go. And you ought to seen that bull cut out after him, too. Head down, tongue out, tail up, bellowing like everything, and actually mowing down the weeds and tearing up the earth and boosting up the sand like a whirlwind. By George, it was a hot race. I and the saddle were back on the rump, and I had the bridle in my teeth, and I was holding on to the pommel with both hands.
There's a chase to see.
We went so fast we left the dogs behind. Then we passed a jackrabbit. Then we overtook a coyote, and we were gaining on an antelope when the rotten girth let go and threw me about 30 yards off to the left.
Always bad when the girth lets go.
And as the saddle went down over the horse's rump, he gave it a kick with his heels that sent it more than 400 yards up in the air. I wish I may die in a minute if he didn't.
That's a powerful kick.
I fell at the foot of the only tree there was in 9 counties, and the next second, I had a hold of that bark with 4 sets of nails in my teeth. And the next second after that, I was astraddle the main limb and cursed my luck in a way that made my breath smell of brimstone.
Oh, that sounds bad.
I was safe now, as long as that bull didn't think of this one thing. But that one thing I dreaded. Oh, I dreaded it very seriously. I made up my mind what I would do in case he did. It was a little over 40 feet to the ground from where I sat. I cautiously unwound the lariat from the pommel of my saddle.
Your saddle? Did you take your saddle up in that tree with you?
Take it up in the tree with me? Why, how you talk. Of course I didn't. No man could do that. It fell in the tree when it come down.
Oh, exactly.
Well, I unwound the lariat and fastened it to one end of the limb. It was the very best green rawhide and capable of sustaining tons. I made a slip noose in the other end and then hung it down to see the length. It reached down 22 feet, halfway to the ground. Then I loaded both barrels of my shotgun with a double charge. I felt satisfied. I said to myself, if he never thinks of that one thing that I dread, all right. But if he does, all right anyhow. I'm ready for him.
So, what's the one thing?
But don't you know that that very thing a man dreads is a thing that always happens? I watched the bull, watched him close. Presently, a thought come into the bull's eye. I knew it, I said. If my nerve fails me now, I am lost. Sure enough, it was just as I had dreaded. He started in to climb the tree.
What? The bull?
Of course, who else?
But buffalo can't climb a tree.
Who says he can't? You ever see one try?
No, I never dreamt of such a thing.
Because you never seen a thing done, does that mean it can't be done?
Well, all right, go on. What did you do?
The bull started up and got along well for about 10 feet, then slipped and slid all the way back. Well, I breathed easier. He tried it again, got up a little higher, slipped again. But he came at it once more, and this time he was careful. He got gradually higher and higher, and my spirits went down more and more. Up he come, an inch at a time, with his eyes hot and his tongue hanging out, higher and higher. Hitched his foot over the stump of a limb and looked up at me as much as to say, "You are my meat, friend."
That was one determined bull.
Up again, higher and higher. He was within 10 feet of me. I took a long breath, and then it was now or never. I had the coil of the lariat all ready. I paid it out slowly till it hung right over his head. All of a sudden, I let go of the slack, and the slip noose fell fairly around his neck. Quicker than lightning, I shot him full in the face.
The bull, in the face.
When the smoke cleared away, there he was, dangling in the air, 20 feet from the ground, twitching and a-shaking. I didn't stop to watch. Anyhow, I shinnied down the tree and headed home.
Bemis, is that all true, just as you have stated it?
I wish I may rot in my tracks and die the death of a dog if it ain't.
Well, we can't refuse to believe it, and we don't. But if there were some proof...
Proof? Did I bring back my lariat?
No.
Did I bring back my horse?
No.
Did you ever see the bull again?
No.
Well then, what more do you want?
I tell you what, if that man ain't a full-time liar, he only misses it by the skin of his teeth.
Buffalo climb a tree. I'll be hornswoggled.
You never know who you're going to meet when the stagecoach stops. I met this one varmint, Slade.
Oh, he's a bad one.
Everybody knows about Slade.
Man, he's a terror.
Yeah, you don't mess with him.
He's probably the meanest man who ever lived. I heard he killed 5 or 6 men.
5 or 6?
Yeah. I heard on his first trip out west, he and the stage driver had words. Now, you don't mess with a stagecoach driver. They know the roads, they know the horses, they know how to read the sky for weather. What they say goes.
Yeah.
But Slade took exception to something the driver said, and he went for his gun. When he looked back up, the driver had the reins in one hand, his Winchester in the other, and he was pointing it right at Slade.
So what happened?
Well, Slade knew his six-shooter wasn't no match for a rifle, so he laughed and said they should settle it like gentlemen, with fisticuffs, man to man. And the driver, he said they'd settle it at the next station while they swapped out the team of horses.
That only takes 5 minutes. Did they have enough time?
Well, Slade hopped down on one side and the driver hopped down on the other. Passengers all got out to stretch their legs and watch what happened. Driver said, "Are you sure you want to do this?" Slade said, "Yeah." Driver said, "Okay." He tossed his Winchester down on the ground and put up his fist.
And?
And Slade up and shot him.
Sounds like Slade.
Yeah, it's him, all right.
That driver should have known better.
They had to get a backup driver out of bed to take the next leg.
Well, I met Slade up in the mountains. He talked the stage company into hiring him. They sent him to the Rocky Ridge Division. They had a lot of trouble with things gone missing there. Wanted Slade to put things right.
Oh, yeah. Thieves are thick up there. Real thick.
There was no law up there. Just, you know, no law. The commonest misunderstandings were settled with a revolver or a knife. Murders were done in open day, and done so often, nobody thought nothing of it. They said them that done it had their reasons. For other people, to meddle would have been impolite.
That's rough, even for this side of the Mississippi.
So, they sent Slade up there. He shot a couple of them cattle rustlers and retrieved some stolen cows. Later on, he caught 2 horse thieves and hanged them himself. Judge, jury, and executioner. Pretty soon, the stage company didn't have no more trouble when Slade was around.
I reckon not.
Took care of that.
Slade prides himself on being real sharp with a gun, you know. He was up in some small town in the mountains somewhere, and one morning, he saw some man walking toward him. Now, that man had accused Slade of cheating at poker a week earlier. Said the cards were marked. And they was, but everybody knows better than to accuse Slade of cheating. Well, almost everybody.
Oh, no.
I was standing with a couple of guys, and Slade pulls out his six-shooter, real casual-like, you know, and he says to them, "Gentlemen," he says, "it's a fine morning. See that man? That rascal's a good 20 yards away. I'll clip the 3rd button off his coat," which he did.
What happened?
Well, we all admired the shooting, and we all went to the funeral, too. 3rd button on his coat. Sure he did.
Anybody seen him since?
There was this bunch one time had enough of Slade. They was gonna lynch him. They set out for him, and they got him, too. They took his gun, locked him up real sturdy, put a guard out front. The next morning, Slade talked that posse into letting him have one last chance to talk to his wife. He begged so sweetly, said he hadn't done right by her, swore he wanted to tell her he was sorry. So they sent for her, told her to hurry if she wanted to see him alive. I went to deliver the message.
Well, that was a decent thing to do.
Now, you might imagine any woman who would marry Slade wouldn't be no quiet schoolmarm. No, sir. She jumped on a horse and rode for life and death.
Uh-huh.
When she arrived, all out of breath, they let her in without searching her, don't you know? And before the door could be closed, she whipped a couple of revolvers out of her handbag. She and Slade shot their way out of there, mounted double, and galloped away unarmed.
Gentlemen, these tales have made their way east, and everyone in Missouri has heard the name of Slade. The last I heard, he had killed 26 or 27 men.
27?
And then the long arm of justice caught up with him. A posse caught up with him at one of those mining towns in the Montana Territory.
Slade wasn't mining, was he?
Nah, he'd been drinking kind of hard for weeks, shooting off his mouth and his guns pretty regular. He even rode his horse into the saloon, made the barkeep give him a beer.
He was out of control.
Yeah, sounds like it.
They'd haul him into court and he'd pay a fine or he'd promise to pay it when he had some cash. Then they let him go.
Should have locked him up.
Well, one day, the sheriff had a warrant for his arrest and he served it. But Slade had been drinking. He took that warrant and tore it up, threw it to the ground and stomped on it. And all his buddies pulled out their guns. The sheriff didn't think it was a good day for him to die, so Slade walked away.
Slade always walked away.
One of Slade's friends knew that the miners were getting fed up. And when he saw Slade tear up that warrant, he told them to get out of town or there'd be hell to pay. Well, Slade had had too much to drink and he didn't see it as a warning. He took it as a threat. He decided the judge must be out to get him.
Might have been.
He went straight to the judge, put his derringer to the judge's head, and said he was going to take him prisoner. Said nobody was going to put Slade in jail.
What'd the judge do?
He did the only thing he could. Nothing. Didn't say a word. Didn't move. Not a twitch. Slade finally got bored and wandered off. Meanwhile, a couple of men went down to the silver mines and reported what was happening. They knew the miners were tired of having to put up with Slade.
Slade, making himself the sheriff and the judge.
You just don't mess with miners. They got deeds and claims to protect.
The miners headed for town, almost all of them, nearly 600 men, determined to put a stop to this. Slade's friends all scattered to the four winds.
That would be something to see.
Slade got wind of what was happening, and he sobered right up. He went to the judge and said he was sorry, and he took it all back, every word.
Too late.
The miners got the town, captured Slade, told them they were going to hang him. Slade started begging for his life. He asked somebody to send for his wife, said he was awful sorry for what he'd done.
Sure, now that he was caught.
Did his wife help him break loose again?
They didn't wait for her. They marched him down to a corral at the end of a street, threw a rope over a beam above the gate, and made Slade stand on a box. He begged and begged to see her. It was all over by the time she got there.
All over.
All over. What happened? I can't see a thing.
Oh, the wind blew the lamp out.
The winder's busted out. Looks like the storm's put a tree branch through the wall.
Sawyer? Oh, God. Boys, I've got Sawyer here, but Huckleberry's loose.
Huckleberry?
My tarantula.
What? I thought you said you had a lid on him.
The wind blew the lid off. He could be anywhere.
How can you tell where he is? It's dark.
He could be anywhere. Ah, what's that?
Don't hurt him.
Ah, sure as blazes ain't letting him hurt me.
Oh, Lord, what was that? It's Huckleberry.
Something's crawling up the back of my neck.
Let me see if I can... There, I got him. Oh, wait, no, he's got me. Oh, God, Al, somebody fetch a lantern.
Saints preserve us. Why are you all standing on the furniture? Get down before you break it. I need to see what kind of damage this tree has done to my building.
Mrs. Flanagan, bring that light over here to Reuben.
Reuben?
Please, Mrs. Flanagan, over here. Look, look, right here. What's that?
I'm seeing a dirty sock, Reuben. Laundry's on Saturday, you know. And what's this broken glass? Is that where me tumblers have been disappearing to?
Mrs. Flanagan, over here.
Chester?
What's this by my foot?
Well, let's see. It's a wad of paper. Looks like it fell from the shelf over there. Well, look at this. It's money. I'll be thanking you to give me the $10 you still owe me for last week's room and board.
Yes. Yes, here.
Mrs. Flanagan? Can you see anything underneath my bed?
Are you worried about the boogeyman? There's nothing under there, man.
Mrs. Flanagan, could we light a candle or two from your lantern?
Where's the candles that blew out? We'll get them burning again. There. That's better. Mr. Clemens, it looks like that tree branch blew right into your bed.
I'll make do, Mrs. Flanagan. I'll make do.
Well, the storm's about done, and we'll start repairs in the morning. Don't burn the candles down too far. I'll leave you to your rest, gentlemen. Good night, gents.
Good night, Mrs.
Good night,
Flanagan.
Mrs. Flanagan.
Good night, Mrs. Flanagan.
Maybe he went out the window.
He could be anywhere. In our shoes. Under our pillows.
Well, I ain't going to bed till we search this place thorough.
Yeah, I'm up for that, yeah, that's for sure.
Well, we've got candles, and we've got cards. Maybe we could play a little cabbage?
Cribbage?
Cribbage.
Ante up, gents. Deuces wild.
You've been listening to Richmond Radio Works' production of Roughing It, based on the book by Mark Twain. Roughing It was written and directed by Carla Beard. John Munger played Sam Clemens. David Jetmore played Silas Doyle and Bemis. Ron Foreman played Amos Murphy and Reuben O'Donovan. Marianne O'Malley Avery played Chester Kelly. Michelle Avery played Mrs. Flanagan. Ruth Ann Munger played Margaret Whitcomb. Sound engineering was done by Rick Funk. Post-production was done by Rachel Finis. This has been a Richmond Radio Works production in conjunction with Earlham College.